Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Local news roundup. Man charged with threatening mother with knife. A 32-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly threatened his mother with a knife. Leon Naberetti was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a first-degree felony. The reported assault happened at 8:57 p.m. September 20th in the 1900 block of North Mockingbird Lane, and Ector County Sheriff's Office probable cause affidavit stated. Deputies reportedly made contact with the complainant, identified as Priscilla Naberetti. She stated that her son, who lived with her, assaulted her and that he was in his room. Priscilla Naberetti reportedly detailed to police that she and her son were arguing in the kitchen. She stated that her son had grabbed her by both wrists, twisted her arms, and pushed her back into her bedroom, where he shoved her into the bathroom sink, hurting her back. Priscilla Naberetti stated that her son grabbed a knife, which had a black handle and chrome blade, which was already in the bathroom sink, raised the knife above his head, and pointed the blade in her direction, the affidavit stated. Priscilla Naberetti reportedly told police that she felt scared when her son held the knife at her in a threatening manner, and she believed that he was going to assault her with it. Priscilla Naberetti stated she pushed her son out of her bedroom and closed the door and waited for a while, and then went outside and waited for deputies. Leon Naberetti was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has one bond totaling $50,000, and he was still in custody as of Tuesday afternoon, jail records show. Man charged with robbing Lyft driver. A 23-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly robbed a Lyft driver at gunpoint. Kevorius Denante Knox was charged with aggravated robbery, a first-degree felony. Eric Medlin, the complainant, reported the robbery to the Odessa Police Department on August 31st, an OPD probable cause affidavit detailed. Medlin stated he was a driver for Lyft and he had picked up a rider, later identified as Knox, from the Regency Square apartment located at 4100 Tanglewood Lane. Medlin reportedly saw Knox come out of his apartment. Medlin took Knox to 201 Pagewood, where Knox robbed Medlin at gunpoint and demanded money. Knox then had Medlin drive him back to the Regency Square apartments, the affidavit stated. Medlin described Knox as a young black male with small braided hair. Investigation reportedly showed the apartment the rider had left was occupied by Knox, and an ID photo of Knox matched the description of Medlin. A photo lineup was administered to Medlin in which he positively identified the rider as Knox. Lyft records showed the profile used by Knox was verified by the same phone number he had on record with the apartment complex, the affidavit stated. Knox was arrested, charged, and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on September 20th, jail records show. He has one bond totaling $60,000, and he was still in custody as of Tuesday afternoon. Man charged with assaulting police officer. A 24-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly attempted to headbutt an officer and kicked that officer in the left leg. Franklin Medina was charged with assault on a public servant, a third-degree felony, resisting arrest, search or transport, a Class A misdemeanor, and public intoxication, a Class C misdemeanor. The reported incident happened at 2 a.m. September 19th at the Red Zone located at 2101 East 8th Street, and Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed. Medina was reportedly refusing to comply with officers' orders to leave the parking lot. Medina was told multiple times to leave and refused to, getting aggressive with officers, placing his hands in officers' faces. Medina was given another chance to leave and continued to refuse to leave, the affidavit stated. Medina had a strong odor of alcohol emitted from his person, slurring speech, red bloodshot eyes, uncooperative attitude, and stumbling while walking. Medina was reportedly placed under arrest for public intoxication. While arresting Medina, he tensed his arms, pulling them away from officers during the arrest. When walking Medina to the patrol unit to search his person, he placed his feet on the ground, causing officers to use force to get him into the vehicle. Medina was transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center, the affidavit stated. He refused to exit the patrol unit and was forcibly removed from the unit. Medina was assisted to the doors to the jail. While transporting into the jail, he turned toward Officer Nicholas Moore and attempted to headbutt him in the face. Medina reportedly used his legs to kick Moore's left leg, causing immediate pain. Medina was assisted to the ground. Medina was booked into Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has two bonds totaling $16,500 and posted bail on September 19th, jail records show. Obituaries: Jane May Pattison Baker. Our mama, Jane May Pattison Baker, passed away Saturday, September 11, 2021. She was born in San Angelo, Texas, to C.E. Pattison and Myrtle Pattison McClure, September 28, 1928. She is survived by her husband, William D. Baker, and her children, Phyllis Mangum, with Richard William Dean Jr. Zula, and Chris Baker, her brother Phil McClure Elsbeth, five grandchildren, six great-grandchildren, and numerous nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents, brothers Hugh McClure and C.E. Pattison, Jr., her son Greg Baker, and great-niece Kelsey Logan. David Ray Fullen, Sr., Eastland. David Ray Fullen, Sr., 82, of Eastland, Texas, passed away on September 17, 2021, in Eastland. David was born in Whiteface, Texas, to W.B. and Nellie Fullen on April 20, 1939. He is preceded in death by his wife, Edna, his parents, his daughter, Connie, and his sister, Mary Lindsay. He is survived his siblings, W.B. Jr. and Carolyn, Carol Hale, Laverne and Waylon Pierce, Deanne and Roland Whitaker, Jerry Fullen, Laura Wilson, sons David and Sherry Fulton, Gary and Karen Fulton, and 10 grandchildren. Graveside services will be at 10 a.m. September 22, 2021 at Sunset Memorial Gardens with Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. To send condolences, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. James Harley Melton, Odessa. James Harley Melton, 40, of Odessa, passed away on Sunday, September 19, 2021. Celebration of Life will be held on Thursday, September 23rd at 2 p.m. at Natalie Pickle and Welsh Chapel. Harley was born on July 29, 1981, in Odessa, Texas. He is survived by his children Elijah, Ashlyn, and Halil. The love of his life, Rihanna, his mother and father, Kathy and Johnny Henderson, his siblings, Amy Rosenberg, Lori Jacob, and Brittany, and numerous nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by his nephew, Jacob Rosenberg. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelch.com. Death Notices. Dolores G. Lolo Cervantes, Odessa. Dolores G. Lolo Cervantes, 77, of Odessa, died Wednesday, September 15, 2021, in Odessa, Texas. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Thursday, September 23rd, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2nd Section. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home of Odessa. Lawrence Christian Borger. Lawrence Christian, 69, of Odessa, Texas, died Saturday, September 11th, in Borger, Texas. Celebration of life is scheduled for 1 p.m. Friday, September 24th, at Rose of Sharon Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2nd Section. Gene Collins is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Esperanza B. Franco, Odessa. Esperanza B. Franco, 91, of Odessa, died Friday, September 17th, in Odessa, Texas. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. Thursday, September 23rd, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Los Angeles Section. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home of Odessa. Marsha Vena Kelly Giesler, Odessa. Marsha Vena Kelly Giesler, 90, of Odessa, died Monday, September 20th, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 3 p.m. September 24th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Armando Grotto Luna, Kermit. Armando Grotto Luna, 73, of Kermit, died Saturday, September 18th, 2021, in Kermit. Mass will be celebrated at 1:30 p.m. September 24th at St. Thomas St. Joseph Catholic Church in Kermit, Texas. Arrangements are by Family Services Funeral Parlor of Kermit. Cynthia Martin, Odessa. Cynthia Martin, 52, of Odessa, Texas, died Wednesday, September 15th, in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 1 p.m. Friday, September 24th, at Rose of Sharon Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa, 2nd Section. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Virginia Gonzalez Romo, Odessa. Virginia Gonzalez Romo, 79, of Odessa, died Saturday, September 18th, in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Wednesday, September 22nd, at Ector County Cemetery, Peaceful Gardens. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Josephine Villa Mendoza, Odessa. Josephine Villa Mendoza, 58, died Friday, September 10th, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home of Odessa.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read the Odessa American from the inside pages, Wednesday, September 22nd. Police investigating hit and run. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly looking for a driver that was involved in a hit and run. The reported hit and run happened at 11:21 a.m. September 11th at the CVS pharmacy, located at 3050 West University Boulevard, an OPD press release detailed. Investigation reportedly showed the driver of a white Mazda struck a gray Nissan Armada and left the scene without meeting necessary legal requirements. OPD has released photos of the driver and the vehicle that can be seen at tinyurl.com/Y5RH29SE. Anyone with information about the hit and run is asked to contact hit and run investigator T. Yelly at 335-5759. If you wish to remain anonymous and seek a reward, you must contact Odessa Crime Stoppers at 333-TIPS and reference case number 21001514. You Teach Venture on Tap by Ruth Campbell. University of Texas Permian Basin announced a new partnership with You Teach, a program that recruits and trains STEM majors for the teaching field, during a news conference Tuesday in the engineering building in Midland. You Teach Permian Basin will be housed in the College of Education at the university. The purpose is to prepare highly qualified science and math teachers. You Teach was developed at the University of Texas at Austin and has been made possible thanks to a $1.9 million investment from the Permian Strategic Partnership. Chief of Staff Executive Director of Communication Tatum Hubbard said Larry Daniel, Dean of the College of Education, and his team, along with some of the arts and sciences faculty, will roll out the program. Daniel said one of UTPB's goals in its strategic plan is to double the number of teachers that the university produces. "We have not taken that goal lightly by any means," Daniel said. He added that a lot of the College of Education faculty has been active and involved in working with us to produce more teachers. Our decision to pursue You Teach fits well with the university's other new initiatives, Daniel said. Two of several initiatives are Us Prep, which has been in partnership with Midland and Ector County ISDs and OC2 UTPB Teaching in 3. Daniel said the Us Prep program has allowed the creation of one-year paid teacher residencies, and the OC2 UTPB Teaching in 3 partnership with Odessa College has allowed UTPB to expedite students' teaching journey from 4 years to 3. Instead of waiting for students to come to them and express interest in teaching, they are going to go after prospective students. A key component of the You Teach program is the paid internship. Students who enter it will complete a bachelor's degree in a science or math field in 4 years while simultaneously earning a secondary teacher certification, a news release said. The program is streamlined and the curriculum is designed specifically for future science and mathematics teachers. This program is going to be a game changer for UTPB. You Teach will capitalize on incredible talent among our university faculty, strong partnerships with our local ISDs, and the support of 49 other You Teach sites nationally that we can learn and grow from being in contact with, and not to mention the incredible students that we're going to recruit through this program. This is indeed a great day for teacher preparation in our community, Daniel added. Jesus Dimas, a 23-year-old senior majoring in chemistry, will be one of the You Teach scholars. Along with his chemistry degree, he will pursue a teaching certification. "I have been inspired by professors such as Dr. Milka Montez on this, and I'm very excited she will be co-directing a wonderful program like You Teach. Since the beginning of my education, many teachers like Dr. Montez have been there to inspire me and guide me to pursue my curiosities and push me to be the person I am today," Dimas said. His teachers are the inspiration for pursuing the profession. "I knew that I was going to be in science one way or another, and I think as the years progressed, especially once I got to high school and college, I just wanted to be like the people that taught me, so that pushed me to be like them," he added. He added that he and others are hoping that STEM majors who haven't considered teaching will change their minds and decide to inspire a new generation of STEM majors. DeMoss plans to graduate in December and start UTeach in January of 2022. He's leaning toward teaching high school. Kimberly Hughes, UTeach Institute Director, said despite the fact that they have 10 established UTeach programs across the state, their partnership with UTPB is their first opportunity to work in this region. And so we're very honored to have this opportunity to make an impact in providing excellent future STEM teachers, Hughes said. UTeach was begun at the University of Texas at Austin in 1997. In 2006, they created UTeach Institute to help other universities around the country to improve their production of STEM teachers. It also is aimed at people in the STEM profession who may want to change careers, along with high school and community college transfer students. Hughes said a unique feature of the program is that students are able to earn their STEM degree and get certified as a STEM teacher without adding additional time to their degree. So far, they have 4 years of retention data nationally from across its partner universities, and about 88% of graduates, when you change programs, do enter the classroom, and 87% are still teaching at the four-year mark. So far, we've got very good evidence that we are doing our job in terms of interesting students in teaching and then providing them the support they need to stay in teaching, Hughes said. She added that they primarily prepare students to teach at the middle and high school levels. Given how challenging teaching is, Hughes said the program doesn't stop working with students. We have a very robust alumni network. We support more than 6,000 graduates nationwide, provide professional development. We provide induction support to teachers. So we work very hard not just to get the teachers in the classroom, but to keep them there and help them continue on their professional trajectories, Hughes said. Daniel said they are going to start recruiting immediately for UTeach, and the first cohort will start in the fall of 2022. David Sparks and Montez are the co-directors at the Institute. I'm excited because I came from another UTeach campus in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, UT Arlington. And while I was there, I was also on the UTeach STEM Educators Association Board of Directors for the organization in Austin. So I have some background experience with it. I was very excited to learn that they were starting a new program and also excited to be one of the co-directors, Sparks said. Montez added that she was also thrilled with the program starting at UTPB. We do have great teachers in ECISD and in Midland, but we want to improve the way that we teach the students so that they can have better approaches to teaching science, because we know that the kids, they're bright. They have the capabilities, but there are so many advances in the way we teach STEM that we want to bring that out to the districts, Montez said.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Sunday, September 19th. BBB tip: 10 tips to avoid buying flood-damaged cars by Dustin Fawcett. News of flooding from the recent storms that affected several states may lead to scam artists attempting to pawn off damaged vehicles as standard second-hand cars. These vehicles typically show up at auto auctions, used car dealerships, and classified ads. Unsuspecting consumers, particularly those living in regions unaffected by hurricanes or flooding, are often fooled by fresh upholstery, new carpeting, and bargain prices. Once the owners of damaged cars settle with the insurance companies, the vehicles are sometimes refurbished and resold. Flooded cars are often transported well beyond the original region where the flood or significant storm occurred, to locations where consumers may be less aware of the damage and warning signs. Sometimes a middleman buyer intentionally hides a car's history as a flood-damaged vehicle through a process known as title washing and sells it to an unsuspecting buyer in a state unaffected by the disaster. Many mechanical problems may occur in flooded cars, and the corrosion to the vehicle caused by floodwaters can take years to surface. When the issues become apparent, the seller is gone, and the new owner is left with an unreliable vehicle, along with no recourse against the seller. Better Business Bureau, BBB, strongly recommends that used car buyers be cautious of unscrupulous businesses and individuals who may try to sell flood-damaged cars as standard second-hand cars without revealing the vehicle's history. BBB offers the following tips to help determine if a used car is flood-damaged. Ask to see the title. Check the date and place of transfer, verifying where the car originated. If the title is stamped salvage or arrived from a recently flood-damaged state, ask questions. Consider purchasing a vehicle history report, which includes information if the car has ever been tagged as salvage or flood-damaged in any state. Carefully check the dashboard. Examine all gauges to make sure they are accurate and there are no signs of water. Look for indications that salvagers may have removed the dashboard. Check the electronic components. Test the lights, windshield wipers, turn signals, cigarette lighter, radio, heater, and air conditioner several times to ensure they work. Also, flex some wires under the dash to see if they bend or crack. Wet wires generally become brittle once they're dry. Check the interior spaces, look in the trunk, glove compartment, and beneath the seats and dash for signs of mud, rust, or water damage. Check for open drainage holes in the bottom of the vehicle. Check the condition of the fabrics. Look for discolored, faded, or mildewed upholstery and carpeting. Recently shampooed carpets may be cause for concern. Carpeting that has been replaced may fit too loosely or may not match the interior color. Get a vehicle history report from a database service. The National Insurance Crime Bureau's, NICB, free database lists flood damage and other information. But take note, NICB reports are only helpful if the previous owner insured the car. If the owner of an uninsured flood-damaged car tries to sell it on the open market and you're the buyer, you may never know there's a problem until things like the electrical system go bad. Remember to check under the hood. Look for standing water, mud, or grit in the spare tire wheel, well, or around the engine compartment under the hood. Do a smell test. A heavy aroma of cleaners and disinfectants is a sign there may be a mold or odor problem. Research the dealer. Always check out the BBB business profile of the dealer at bbb.org and find reputable used car dealers near you. Get an inspection. Before buying any used car, consider having a pre-purchase inspection done by a trusted mechanic. For more information, read BBB's tips on buying used cars at tinyurl.com/4E9M4BT6. If you have been the victim of a scam, report it to BBB Scam Tracker. Information provided may prevent another person from falling victim. Other voices from the Odessa American. Letters to the editor for Sunday. Biden should resign in disgrace. Sandy Milner, Odessa, writes, apparent evidence of a phone call which General Milley made to a Chinese general has surfaced, indicating that Milley advised General Lee that if the U.S. attacked China, he would call Lee in advance and warn him. If true, and according to the transcript of the call, it is, then Milley is plainly guilty of treason and collaborating with the enemy. Why is the media silent about this? Of course, we all know the answer, because the media is heavily biased in favor of the Democrats. The media was calling for Trump to be charged with treason and impeached on the basis of what turned out to be totally bogus claims of collusion with the Russians. The mere allegation that he colluded with Russia was enough for the lamestream media to convict him, and they continued to persecute him even after a months-long investigation, costing millions of taxpayer dollars, found no collusion. That is the way it always is when it comes to the differences between Republicans and Democrats. The Republican is always guilty, even when he's not. Why is it then that the American people either don't or won't wise up and quit electing Democrats? Surely the American public can't be that stupid. Oops, yes they can. After all, they elected Bill Clinton and Obama twice and now Biden. This is in spite of Biden's obvious senility. If nothing else, Biden's senility and incompetence, as evidenced by the disastrous Afghanistan evacuation farce, should convince even the Democrats that there is something seriously wrong with the Democratic Party. I would be willing to wager just about anything that Biden would not have left his son in Afghanistan. Yet he left several hundred other American citizens there, and yet has the sheer effrontery to call the botched evacuation an extraordinary success. Are you freaking kidding me? Biden and his idiotic cohort Harris should resign in disgrace. Also, Milley, Austin, and Blinken should go with them. I wish the Democrats would be investigated to determine if they have any affiliation with America. I have seen it and heartily agree with a post on Facebook, Oops, Fascist Book, which says, I would rather be an American than a Democrat. Thanks.
Hello, this is Michael. To fill for time, I'm going to read an extra article. This is from the New York Times, published Wednesday, September 22nd, 2021. Moderna versus Pfizer. Both knockouts, but one seems to have the edge. A series of studies found that the Moderna vaccine seemed to be more protective over the long term than the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. Here's why. By Apurva Mandavali. It was a constant refrain from federal health officials after the coronavirus vaccines were authorized. These shots are all equally effective. That has turned out not to be true. Roughly 221 million doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine have been dispensed thus far in the United States, compared with about 150 million doses of Moderna's vaccine. In a half dozen studies published over the past few weeks, Moderna's vaccine appeared to be more protective over the long term than the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. Research published on Friday by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention found that the efficacy of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine against hospitalization fell from 91% to 77% after a four-month period following the second shot. The Moderna vaccine showed no decline over the same period. The efficacy gap continues to widen. It may have implications for the debate on booster shots. Federal agencies this week are evaluating the need for a third shot of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine for some high-risk groups, including older adults. Scientists who were initially skeptical of the reported differences between the Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech vaccines have slowly become convinced that the disparity is small but real. Our baseline assumption is that the mRNA vaccines are functioning similarly, but then you start to see a separation, said Natalie Dean, a biostatistician at Emory University in Atlanta. It's not a huge difference, but at least it's consistent. But the discrepancy is small, and the real-world consequences uncertain, because both vaccines are still highly effective at preventing severe illness and hospitalization, she and others cautioned. Yes, likely a real difference, probably reflecting what's in the two vials, said John Moore, a virologist at Weill Cornell Medicine in New York. But truly, how much does this difference matter in the real world? It's not appropriate for people who took Pfizer to be freaking out that they got an inferior vaccine. Even in the original clinical trials of the three vaccines eventually authorized in the United States, made by Pfizer-BioNTech, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson, it was clear that the J&J vaccine had a lower efficacy than the other two. Research since then has borne out that trend, although J&J announced this week that a second dose of its vaccine boosts its efficacy to levels comparable to the others. The Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna vaccines rely on the same mRNA platform, and in the initial clinical trials, they had remarkably similar efficacy against symptomatic infection, 95% for Pfizer, BioNTech, and 94% for Moderna. This was in part why they were described as more or less equivalent. The subtleties emerged over time. The vaccines have never been directly compared in a carefully designed study, so the data indicating that effects vary are based mostly on observations. Results from those studies can be skewed by any number of factors, including the location, the age of the population vaccinated, when they were immunized, and the timing between the doses, Dr. Dean said. For example, the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine was rolled out weeks before Moderna's to priority groups, older adults and healthcare workers. Immunity wanes more quickly in older adults, so a decline observed in a group consisting mostly of older adults may give the false impression that the protection from the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine falls off quickly. Given those caveats, I'm not convinced that there truly is a difference, said Dr. Paul Gruber, a senior vice president at Pfizer. I don't think there's sufficient data out there to make that claim. But by now, the observational studies have delivered results from a number of locations: Cotter, the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, several other states in the United States, and in healthcare workers, hospitalized veterans, or the general population. Moderna's efficacy against severe illness in those studies ranged from 92 to 100%. Pfizer-BioNTech's numbers trailed by 10 to 15 percentage points. The two vaccines have diverged more sharply in their efficacy against infection. Protection from both waned over time, particularly after the arrival of the Delta variant, but the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine's values fell lower. In two of the recent studies, the Moderna vaccine did better at preventing illness by more than 30 percentage points. A few studies found that the levels of antibodies produced by the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine were one-third to one-half of those produced by the Moderna vaccine. Yet, that decrease is trivial, Dr. Moore said. For comparison, there is a more than 100-fold difference in the antibody levels among healthy individuals. Still, other experts said that the corpus of evidence pointed to a disparity that would be worth exploring, at least in people who respond weakly to vaccines, including older adults and immunocompromised people. At the end of the day, I do think there are subtle but real differences between Moderna and Pfizer, Dr. Jeffrey Wilson, an immunologist and physician at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, who was a co-author of one such study, published in the JAMA Network Open this month. In high-risk populations, it might be relevant. It'd be good if people took a close look. Pfizer is a big hammer, Dr. Wilson added, but Moderna is a sledgehammer. Several factors might underlie the divergence. The vaccines differ in their dosing and in the time between their first and second doses. Vaccine manufacturers would typically have enough time to test a range of doses before choosing one, and they have done such testing for their trials of the coronavirus vaccine in children. But in the midst of a pandemic last year, the companies had to guess at the optimal dose. Pfizer went with 30 micrograms, Moderna with 100. Moderna's vaccine relies on a liquid nanoparticle which can deliver the larger dose. And the first and second shots of that vaccine are staggered by 4 weeks, compared with 3 for the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. The extra week may give immune cells more time to proliferate before the second dose, said Dr. Paul Burton, Moderna's chief medical officer. We need to keep studying this and to do more research, but I think it's plausible. Moderna's team recently showed that a half dose of the vaccine still sent antibody levels soaring. Based on those data, the company asked the FDA this month to authorize 50 micrograms, the half dose, as a booster shot. There is limited evidence showing the effect of that dose, and none on how long the higher antibody levels might last. Federal regulators are reviewing Moderna's data to determine whether the available data are sufficient to authorize a booster shot of the half dose. Ultimately, both vaccines are still holding steady against severe illness and hospitalization, especially in people under 65, Dr. Moore said. Scientists had initially hoped that the vaccines would have an efficacy of 50 or 60%. We would have all seen that as a great result and been happy with it, he said now. Fast forward to now, and we're debating whether 96.3% vaccine efficacy for Moderna versus 88.8% for Pfizer is a big deal. And now, here is another article from the New York Times on a topic of interest. This article, the audio was downloaded from the New York Times website, and reading time is approximately 13 minutes.
During the pandemic, pharmacies suddenly took on an especially important role in our lives. We went to them for prescription drugs, coronavirus testing, and vaccination. Of course, we also relied on them for hand sanitizer, masks, wipes, and everyday sundries like toilet paper. But with social distancing requirements, many people turned to drive-through windows and curbside services. These often required using smartphones and computers. Hi, I'm Joshua Brockman, a contributor to The Times. I cover the intersection between health, business, and technology. The pandemic has cast a spotlight on a range of inequalities, including access to pharmacies and all that they provide. This has serious health consequences, and I wanted to know more about how pharmacy policies and services are impacting people with disabilities. Here's my article. During the pandemic, Curtis Chong has avoided the 2.5-hour journey to his grocery store pharmacy, including a round-trip bus ride to pick up his prescription. Even though Mr. Chong, a retiree in Aurora, Colorado, said he is readily identifiable as a blind person because he uses a white cane for mobility, his pharmacist never suggested he could have his medications labeled in an accessible way. Through a Zoom meeting, Mr. Chong learned about Accessible Pharmacy Services, a startup that now delivers his medication with labels that convert text to speech. Mr. Chong said the new specialty pharmacy provided an array of products and assistance, quote, so that the blind can identify their medications privately and independently. Unlike most other pharmacies, Accessible Pharmacy does not cater to walk-in customers, or for that matter, people who can see. The company offers service to blind people and those with low vision, including assistance from those who can see and free home delivery for prescriptions, medical devices, and over-the-counter medications. The pandemic has cast a spotlight on inequalities at pharmacies, where precautions and new programs have further limited access to health care for people with intellectual, developmental, and physical disabilities. Critical services like drive-through coronavirus testing, vaccination, and pharmacy pickup windows have failed in many instances because they were rolled out in ways that were inaccessible. How can a blind person drive through a pharmacy? Why isn't walk-through an option? In addition, labeling and packaging have been a long-standing problem for older adults and for anyone who cannot read or understand the tiny type that appears on most prescription bottles and the accompanying pamphlets listing side effects and drug interactions. There is no national standard that specifically addresses accessible labeling or packaging, despite the potential needs of more than 85 million, approximately 1 in 4 people in the United States, who, according to the Census Bureau, have a disability, and more than 12 million people who have serious difficulty seeing. The Food and Drug Administration is responsible for regulating prescription drug labels, and under a 2012 law, required a U.S. agency to develop guidelines for accessible labels for those who are blind or visually impaired. In 2016, the Government Accountability Office found that blind and low-vision patients, quote, continue to face barriers accessing drug label information, including identifying pharmacies that can provide accessible labels. Some improvements have been made, and states have taken the lead on pharmacy oversight. A few, including Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, and Maine, are exploring legislation that would require pharmacies to provide prescription labels in Braille, large print, high contrast, and with audio. In 2018, Nevada passed a law requiring pharmacies to provide a prescription reader or to help patients obtain one, and Oregon passed a similar law in 2019. Nestled in a nondescript mini mall next to a Pizza Hut and a partially vacant building, Accessible Pharmacy operates in Fairless Hills, Pennsylvania. Concierge agents speak with each patient on the phone, coordinate refills and drug interaction questions with their doctors, and consult resident pharmacists. A packaging and labeling menu for prescriptions includes Braille, large print, and audio, all free of charge. We decided to create a company where accessibility and reduction of barriers would be our primary focus, with an incredibly welcoming sense of hospitality, said Alex Cohen, 45, company co-founder and professor of marketing at Westchester University outside of Philadelphia, and one-time general manager of a hotel. He became blind after being diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, a genetic degenerative disease, when he was 20. Accessible Pharmacy, which launched in May 2020, resulted from collaboration between Mr. Cohen, the Chief Marketing and Accessibility Officer, and Andy Burstein, the Chief Executive. Quote, "It's still like the Wild West for us in terms of reliably and consistently finding solutions at the national level," said Mr. Chong, 67. He gets his prescriptions from Accessible Pharmacy with ScriptTalk. A tag is placed on the bottom of each pill container that is programmed to include medication information. It can be read aloud using the ScriptTalk app on his iPhone or with a freestanding device. Envision America, the manufacturer, said ScriptTalk is available in 25 languages and is used by over 20,000 people. Mr. Chong pays more for his medications because Accessible Pharmacy isn't a preferred pharmacy with his Medicare plan, but said he is willing to pay extra so that his medication labels are tailored to his needs. He also said he found the websites of major drugstore chains problematic because of unlabeled graphics, requests for the prescription number, and a, quote, "general lack of efficiency when ordering refills." Accessible Pharmacy employees respond to video calls via Be My Eyes, a free app that provides assistance for blind and low-vision people using a network of sighted volunteers. Users requiring help with prescriptions or devices receive sighted assistance from the pharmacy. It can also set up and send out talking medical devices, including blood pressure cuffs, thermometers, blood glucose meters, and continuous glucose monitors, and troubleshoot through the app once patients have a device in hand. The pharmacy also fills orders using specialized equipment and can provide enhanced packaging with tactile differentiations for morning and night doses. Lynn Heights, 63, a community training specialist for the blind who lives in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania, said she preferred the company's disposable pill organizer so that she doesn't have to figure out what's in every bottle, and the pharmacy sends her the next month's supply 1 week before she runs out. After she and her husband were diagnosed with COVID-19, the pharmacy sent an overnight package with prednisone and cough syrup that her doctor prescribed. This summer, the American Foundation for the Blind expanded its research on the effects of the pandemic to learn more about service interruptions as well as the short and long-term issues encountered by those who are blind, deaf and blind, or have low vision. In an op-ed last fall, Penny Rosenblum, the former director of research at the foundation, described one such obstacle. Quote, "Drive-through and curbside pickup discriminate," she wrote. "This doesn't work for those with vision loss. Communities must have alternative plans, be it porch delivery, walk-up, or bike-through." Deanna Quietwater Noriega, a writer and a full-time caregiver for her husband, Curtis, gets the couple's prescriptions and any other pharmacy items they need hand-delivered to their front door by D&H Drugstore in Columbia, Missouri. Ms. Noriega, 73, was born with glaucoma and has been blind since she was 8. "They know us by name and always treat us with respect and friendliness," she said of her independent pharmacy. "They go the extra mile to be sure our medications are compatible with each other and argue on our behalf if our insurance company balks at the drug our doctors prescribed." Ms. Noriega's medications come with ScriptTalk labels that she reads with her iPhone. Previously, she filled their prescriptions through Walmart. But the problem, she said, was the couple was never told when the refills had run out until they showed up at the pharmacy. We were expected to read the very small print on the label, she said. Many independent pharmacies offer personalized services, including home delivery, to meet customers' needs. Major drugstore chains also offer home delivery in many places. Over the last several years, chain pharmacies have become somewhat more accessible, in part because of lawsuits and negotiations led by advocacy organizations like the American Council of the Blind. But finding a pharmacy with a full menu of accessible solutions under one roof has been elusive. Last summer, CVS Health, which offers Script Talk via its website, added a feature to its app called Spoken Rx that can scan labels and read the prescription aloud, which the company said is now available in 10,000 stores. Walmart also provides Script Talk in nearly 1,800 Walmart and Sam's Clubs locations. And there have been other agreements reached with Walgreens to offer its talking pill reminder free of charge. Eric Bridges, executive director of the council, said they have yet to engage with Amazon Pharmacy. Dr. Steven Erickson, a pharmacist and professor at the University of Michigan College of Pharmacy, teaches a class where guest speakers with various disabilities share their experiences with pharmacists so that students can demonstrate, quote, disability cultural competence, he said. Without that education, there is a greater risk of patients stopping the medicine or not taking it as intended by their physician, he said. Getting one-on-one time with a busy pharmacist can also be daunting, so people often settle for printed instructions. The small font size can be an impediment for people with low vision. In addition, those with cognitive issues or limited health literacy may have difficulty understanding the material. Lack of access can also affect deaf patients when the pharmacist doesn't know sign language or when video relay service or a translator are not provided. Disposable pill organizers and sealed packets provide a, quote, user-friendly solution, Dr. Erickson said, but some large chains do not provide them. CVS offers pre-sorted packets that can be delivered to one's home or pharmacy for pickup. And refilling medications at the same time, so-called med syncing, also helps patients by reducing trips to the pharmacy. Both customized patient medication packaging and med syncing are especially beneficial for people with disabilities who may face transportation barriers or difficulty manipulating traditional medication vials, Dr. Erickson said. Mr. Cohen said the company meets monthly with a packaging advisory committee of blind adults. Customer feedback led to the addition of pet and guide dog medications to the delivery menu, and over-the-counter sundries like aspirin and toothpaste. What's more, Dr. Erickson said it's common for some people, especially those with intellectual and developmental disabilities, to have other medical conditions that require five or more prescriptions, a scenario known as polypharmacy. For a few years, Hayden Schock, 28, who is deaf and had a kidney transplant, took several drugs for his condition. During the pandemic, Mr. Schock, a program analyst for the General Service Administration, who lives in Arlington, Virginia, used either an app that provides speech-to-text, called Live Caption, or pen and paper when he went to Walgreens. Masks posed another difficulty because they blocked the visual clues of pharmacy staff. Safe and Clear makes an FDA-approved mask with a window. I wouldn't call myself a lip reader, he said, but I like to see people's facial expression and lip movement when I communicate with them. When his insurance changed to Inova Pharmacy Services, which is affiliated with the regional nonprofit healthcare provider, it delivered his prescriptions. Through his video phone number, which is connected to apps like Convo, Purple, or Sorensen, he can talk to the pharmacy staff with the aid of a sign language interpreter. So far, accessible pharmacy has made inroads largely in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic regions of the country. Mr. Cohen said the company is licensed in 31 states and hopes to expand to all states. The pandemic, Mr. Cohen notes, has given pharmacies and retailers reasons to rethink their customer service, because many, quote, overestimated the role technology could play in assuaging the fears of people with disabilities. The assumption that these communities of people with differing needs are tech-savvy is perilous, he added, noting that some people still only have a landline. We always welcome a phone conversation, Mr. Cohen said.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Extra Joint on the End of Spine. Dear Dr. Roach, 67 years ago, I developed extreme back pain after the delivery of my second child. The X-ray technician said I was born with an extra joint on the end of my spine. Now it feels like it just slipped out again, and I don't think the doctors believe me. What type of doctor would have knowledge of this condition? J.E.L. Answer. My best guess is that you are one of the 10% or so of people born with a 6th lumbar vertebrae. In most cases, a person is never aware of this and it causes no problems, but can become an issue in some cases of spinal trauma. An orthopedic surgeon, rheumatologist, or physiatrics will have knowledge of this condition and could evaluate you probably with an X-ray. Some people will benefit from an injection into the joint between the vertebrae, but no one can say for sure whether that would help you without a full evaluation.
This is the Dear Abby column. Heartbroken wife ready to end long marriage. Dear Abby, when I found out a few months ago that my husband of 24 years had been having affairs with several men, it devastated me. I have gone to counseling to try to deal with the pain and depression I now suffer from. He's in counseling for himself as well, and we are also in couples counseling to see if our marriage is salvageable. He tells me it has nothing to do with me, but more about his need for attention, and that he didn't feel it was cheating because it wasn't with another woman. The problem is, he did this for 6 years. I'm no longer in love with him, and yes, I did love him more than life itself. I feel I need to end our marriage because I will never be able to trust him again, and I will never be enough for him. I'm struggling with guilt about it. He cries when I tell him I'm done, which makes me feel awful. How can I make it easier for both of us? Signed, Devastated Beyond Words. Dear Devastated, that may not be possible, and you are not to blame for what happened. Once you accept that fact, you may begin to feel less guilty. Married men do not engage in affairs with other men because they aren't getting enough attention from their wives. Whether your husband is a deeply closeted gay man or bisexual is anybody's guess, but he chose to cheat on you. Bisexual people of both sexes in committed relationships remain faithful, which he wasn't for 6 years. Keep that in mind when you tell him again that you are done, and then hand him some tissues and call your lawyer. Dear Abby, my oldest daughter, Heather, has started her senior year of high school. She's often angry and confrontational with my husband and me. We've learned to remain neutral and not react to her attempt to pick fights. However, we have two younger daughters, 15 and 9. We found out that Heather often swears at them and calls them the B word, and sometimes worse. Unfortunately, it's something I hear about long after it's happened. My younger girls have witnessed her swear at us, too. Heather will be 18 in a couple of weeks, and frankly, we're ready for her to move out once she gets her diploma. Until then, how would you handle this situation? Signed, Tired of the Language. Dear Tired, talk to your daughter. Why is she so angry and disrespectful to you and your husband? Does Heather have emotional issues? If so, what has caused them? Once you have some answers, you and your husband can get your daughter professional help if she needs it. In the meantime, tell Heather you don't like the attitude she has been displaying and you want it stopped immediately. Make plain that if her bad behavior continues, there will be consequences. And then, if it does, follow through. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.